Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me as ever on the eve of the CFL season kickoff, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, you must be getting excited, close to game time when it's for real over there.
Yeah, it is. We hop on a plane and fly to Calgary today and play the Stampeders tomorrow night in a rematch of the Grey Cup game from last year. So it's going to be an exciting opening.
I should have actually researched this before we started recording, but people can watch in the UK now, can't they?
Yeah, you can watch on BT Sport, ESPN. They're going to broadcast CFL games. I believe it's 25 CFL games they're going to broadcast. We're going to be on TV numerous times. So, and actually, tomorrow night's game will be one of the first that will be played over there. So it's exciting. The opening of any professional football season is, you know, all the teams have hope of, you know, having a great year and making a run to the championship game. And certainly for us, after having been there 2 years in a row, you know, we want to get back and finally finish the deal, and no better way to start that than with the defending champions.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to bring you some news from around the NFL. We're going to look at what coaches and players do during their quiet time, because this is now the period of rest and recuperation and recharging of batteries before training camps begin at the end of July. And we're going to unveil our top five cornerbacks. We've done quarterbacks and wide receivers. We had to satisfy Jeff's need for defense, so we're going to do the corners this week. Jeff, let's start with the Tom Brady appeal. I mean, there's not too much we can say on this. They met with the commissioner for 10 hours, earlier this week, Tuesday this week, and you know, not going to hear anything until next week. So, but, you know, obviously there was a lot laid out by Brady's team if they're in there for 10 hours.
Everything that I've heard from sources here tells me that Brady did a great job and they were extremely well prepared. They addressed every single question that was brought up in the Wells report and all the accusations, and Brady was very earnest and believable in his position. So I think this is really going to be interesting to see how this plays out. You know, the Greg Hardy appeal is still standing out there, so I don't know if this will usurp that and it'll jump over the top and he'll get his appeal read first, or, you know, whether they're going to deal with the Hardy one and then put this one. There's no set time that this has to be done in. I think what's really interesting is there's already been some saber rattling out of, you know, the Brady camp that if the you know, penalty isn't significantly reduced, that they may take this into the court of law. So, you know, I it's interesting how the commissioner now is going to have to juggle another issue on his table while he's, you know, considering the Greg Hardy appeal.
You can tell it was a pretty quiet week, Jeff, for news outside of the Brady thing, because we had the Peyton Manning to Houston trade rumors that were quickly quashed by everyone who was close to both of those teams. I think that was nothing more than rumors, as it suggested. There was one piece of news. Todd Gurley, the Rams running back, has said that he thinks his return for training camp looks pretty realistic. In other words, you know, he should be out there from the start of summer. Now, I was going to ask you, Jeff, does he need to be? Do they need to force him back? Because he's coming back from those torn ACL injuries. And, you know, as a running back, could he come in late and succeed? Is it that kind of position? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the thing that I would certainly be cautionary about if I was, you know, his football team was, you know, you talk about a running back and his ability to plant his foot, stick his foot in the ground and make a definitive cut. That's how he makes his living. And you want to make sure that knee is 100% before he's back. And there's certainly no need. Training camps are long in the NFL. They've got four exhibition games. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been in attendance at minicamp and OTAs and all of that. So it's, if he can process the, you know, the information that he needs to. And always, Neil, when they talk about running backs, rookie running backs, the area where they, you know, they talk about the toughest thing for him is in the blitz pickups and
yes,
the protection. If, you know, and that's mental work. That's not, you know, that's not something that he needs to be you know, out there grinding every day in practice. I think they really need to be cautious with that knee and make sure that they get into the season, full speed.
So putting the blitz pickups to one side, Jeff, is running back an easier position generally to pick up and play as opposed to coming in as a quarterback or a cornerback or a wide receiver?
Certainly, it's more of an instinctive position. There's, obviously, with the higher level you go, the more sophisticated the defenses you see, the more that your cut is anticipated. Because, interestingly enough, Neil, when you start playing this game at the amateur level, at the low levels, the reactions of players are less predictable. When you get to the NFL level, the reaction of your opponent is very predictable because they're so drilled and so schooled and so sound in everything that they do. So, from that standpoint, I think running back is one of the positions on the football field, and maybe pass rusher is the other, edge rusher, where a young kid can miss training camp, miss time on the field, and still come in and play at a high level. As long as he's not in there and seeing those exotic blitzes that are sometimes very difficult to sort through.
One other piece of news, Jeff. Odell Beckham Jr. was reported as to being frustrated at constant teasing from his teammates. Stuff about him being too big time, being on the cover of the Madden game, teasing him about his hamstrings. Now, his receivers coach, Sean Ryan, says that Odell gives out as good as he gets, but Odell did go to the media with this complaint. And I guess we wouldn't normally have made very much of this had it not been for the Jonathan Martin Richie Incognito story from a little while ago. This is probably something that does make headlines now and is cause for concern.
Yeah, I'm really actually quite surprised that Coughlin, who's really more of a no nonsense guy, lets this. Obviously, if he goes to the media with it, and they're all a little bit divas, the receivers are in the National Football League. But, still, when you go to the media with something like that, that indicates that there, to me anyway, that indicates that there's a potential for an issue there. And usually Coughlin, has an extremely good hold or finger on the pulse of his football team. So I would not be surprised if that was not addressed very quickly in a team meeting about, number one, talking in the media about things that are personal in your football team, what goes in the locker room. And then also, number two, about guys, how you deal with each other is really, really important.
Mm, no, absolutely. Hey, Jeff, I'm in a little meeting room just off the side of the reception area in the NFL UK office. We've got this very, very surreal situation going on here. As I look through the glass door, on a big screen in the reception area, was me reporting from the sidelines of the Super Bowl, and I've just thrown up to the studio, and now you're waffling away in the studio. So it's like you're on my screen and you're on my phone. It's like you're everywhere. It's brilliant. You can never have too much Jeff Reinbold. Isn't that what you always say?
Oh, yeah, listen to you. I was really concerned. I was concerned about you because Nick told me when he called me this morning to tell me we were just about ready to go. He said, Neil's in the loo. And I said, oh, my God, you're not doing it from the loo. Storeroom's bad enough, but not the bathroom.
Listen, it's a pre-podcast routine of mine. What can I say? Everyone has pre-game routines. There's my one. Jeff, so obviously we've talked about some of the news. It is quietening down in the NFL. And this is the time where players get, 5 weeks off before the start of training camp, that grind that you coaches always talk about. We have players coming over to the UK. We've got 6 players that are coming over from the teams playing in London this year. We've got Andrew Luck coming back for a few days. I'm very lucky to be working with him for a few days of filming for an educational website being built by NFL International. Thomas Davis, the NFL Man of the Year, is coming over to run a camp over here in the UK. So this is the time when players can get away from their teams for a bit. And I want to ask you about the contrast between coaches and players, because I've heard it said that this is when coaches absolutely have to be sitting on the beach and getting away and recharging those batteries. But for the players, they can't not work out for 5 weeks, otherwise they come into camp out of shape. So what's it like? What's the difference there between coaches and players, and do you coaches really switch off?
Well, I think guys get out of the office as fast as they can, and they spend as much time as they possibly can, you know, with their families and, you know, as you say, at the beach. I know when I was at Hawaii, Rob Ryan would always come over during this period with his family, his extended family, and Rex and Buddy and the whole crew would be on Maui for at least 4 of these weeks that they get off. And, you know, because it is the only time really during the calendar year when the coaches get a significant amount of time off, because you go right from the season to draft preparation, then the combine, you know, the Senior Bowl, then OTAs, then mini camps, then this little 5-week window is really the only chance you get to you know, have some normalcy in your life and recharge your batteries. For the players, as you said, it's a little bit different, because the grind of the off-season conditioning programs, you know, have really gotten guys in great football shape at this point. Now the key thing is that they don't lose that over these 5 weeks. And you really worry as a coach, because some of your kids, particularly the bigger guys, the linemen, you know, you really wonder whether they're, you know, getting their work done during this period of time, because you cannot enforce it. You can't look, you know, I mean, you can't go ensure that they're in the weight room, or, you know, you have to depend on their professionalism, yeah, if you will. Or if they're at Popeye's Chicken eating the 5-piece dinner menu, and
just the five.
That's where the five of the five yeah, 5-piece, or the whole bucket, you know. But that's where you really hope that you've done a great job with your team, and they understand, and they're professional enough to recognize that they have got to come into camp in shape. The days of, you know, 25, 30 years ago, where guys came to camp to get in shape, yeah, those days are long gone in the National Football League.
I remember speaking a couple of years ago to Eugene Monroe at Jacksonville's mini camp. So this was in June. It was the last day of mini camp. Obviously, Monroe now the starting tackle for the Baltimore Ravens. And he said that, you know, today is like the last day of school. I mean, he said literally the cars are lined up facing the exit of the parking lot, and we're ready to go as soon as coach lets us out of this building. But he did also say, as a player, you can go away on vacation, and that's what he was going to do. He was going to go away on vacation, he was going to go to the beach, but that wasn't going to stop him from running for 30 minutes every morning or do something to keep his body ticking over. So he even as a player, he was going to get away and, you know, get a holiday in and get some time off, but he was going to keep that sort of fitness ticking over, and I think that's probably important as well.
Well, that's what the guys that are professionals do. And, you know, there's a saying in the business that there are a lot of guys that play pro football, but there are very few professionals. Mm. And the professional guys do take care of their bodies, because they recognize that your body is your business. And if you don't take care of your business, you won't be in the business very long. So the guys that get it, you know, you don't worry about it. But there is a certain percentage of your team that doesn't get it. And those are the guys that, you know, can do something stupid during this time, or, you know, whether that's getting in an off the field incident or just not working out.
Well, that's the thing, Jeff, isn't it? Because the coaches are relaxing on the beach, but the one thing they don't want is that late night phone call.
Oh, let me tell you something. If for the head coaches, there's no relaxation. You know, Pete Carroll's going to go over to his place in Haleiwa, and, you know, Rex is going to get away, and you know, Tom Coughlin is maybe going to relax for 5 minutes, but, you know, the reality of it is that you never relax, because, as you say, that phone is, you're waiting for that call at 3 o'clock in the morning from the security guy, and it's just like, oh no. Yeah. So, you know, it's bizarre in pro football. This is how crazy it is. We have a starting rush end who is an all-pro player for us in the CFL. We're just getting ready to go play our opener. We get through training camp. He's healthy. He's walking downtown the other day and is startled by a deer and turns and to run away and gashes his leg on a steel pipe, and he's out for 6 weeks. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. It's just,
I shouldn't laugh, Jeff, but it shows there's always something, right?
Yeah, you just never know. I mean, until, like this morning, when we get on that plane, you're going to walk down the aisle of the plane. You're going to make sure all the seats are full, just to make sure that they all got there.
No wonder your coach is always so paranoid, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
They're all out to get you, Jeff. Let's look at our top five cornerbacks then in the NFL. So, first of all, Jeff, I know you've coached this position during the course of your career. What are we looking for in a what do you look for in a good cornerback? And you know, whether it differentiates from college to the NFL. I know in the NFL now we see a lot of press man. Darrell Revis was telling me about that last week when I was in New York. You know, there's a lot of, you have to be able to play press man in the NFL, in his opinion. What are you looking for from a good cornerback in the NFL?
Well, I think it really kind of varies depending on what you want to be as a scheme defensively. Yeah. Now, I agree with Revis in that, you know, I'm a pressure guy. I'm a, you know, from the, you know, from the Ryan family tree, and so what we look for is a longer, if you can find it now, again, a longer guy who can walk up and get in a receiver's face on the line of scrimmage and play that bump and run man with no help all around him. And those guys are really, really rare. And it was interesting. This has really been a fun thing for us to do because, you know, it forces you to think about what really it is. What are the criteria that you look for in that position? And who are the guys in the league that really have those skills? And, you know, I as I went through it, it's really an impressive group of cornerbacks playing in the National Football League right now. And I'm just going to throw names, and then we can come back and say where we had them. But, you know, you talk about Joe Hayden and Richard Sherman and Jonathan Joseph, Byron Maxwell, Darrell Revis, Vontae Davis, Aqib Talib, Antonio Cromartie. Just guys that Brent Grimes, guys that just have really, Leotis McKelvin, Tremont Williams, really, really fine players. And these guys may be the best athletes, pure athletes, you know, on the field, because a receiver can have some stiffness in his hips and you know, it's, you know, some things that are lacking in his athleticism and still get away with it because he can become kind of a situational receiver. But these guys who live out there on the edge with no help around them in that pure one-on-one scenario, they have to be the best athletes, in my opinion. And I think they have to have a certain personality type, Neil, that, you know, has that rare ability to get beat and just put it away and come back and compete the very next play.
Yeah, move on to the next play. And I guess the scheme can define a player as well. I mean, one guy you didn't mention there, Jeff, Alteron Verner of Tampa Bay, is a very good zone kind of, who's a good fit for their defense. And Revis, when he was with Tampa Bay, wasn't really a good fit for that defense, was he? So again, you can slot players in based on the scheme they're playing in.
Right, and it's really interesting too. And this is where there's a great amount of discussion right now about Richard Sherman, because he plays in a system that he is uniquely suited for. They're very simple. They play really basically variations of two coverages, cover one and cover three, which is man-to-man and, you know, three deep zone. And he doesn't switch sides. He plays on one side, you know, plays left corner the entire time, where you get some of these other guys and they're constantly matched. Like Revis is constantly put against the other team's best receiver.
Yeah.
So he'll play all over the field. He'll play inside, he'll play outside, he'll play left, he'll play right. He has to follow a guy across in motion. So he's really asked to do many more things than Sherman is. Now, that doesn't negate Sherman's numbers and his ability, because he's, again, in my top five.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, that gives bonus points to some of these other guys who, you know, have to be matched up every week on. I mean, can you imagine the pressure of, you know, 18 straight weeks of knowing that you're going to go out there and you're going to line up against the other team's best guy, and there's no rest. There's no, hey, you're going to get a playoff, or why don't you go cover the tight end this time? They put those guys out there, and incredibly, you know, they handle that kind of stress and pressure and just keep coming back for more.
Yeah, Revis actually told me, Jeff, I mean, we look at receivers against cornerbacks. We think of it as being a one-on-one, the cornerbacks out there on an island. Revis said it, actually, when you think about it, he said it's like a two-on-one fast-breaking basketball is how he described it to me. He said, because the quarterback knows where he's going with the ball, the receiver knows where he's going. So it's always actually a two-on-one situation there. So, you know, it is a hard position, and they're, you know, the receivers are flying down the field and the corners are backpedaling. I mean, it's It's up there. I know they say quarterback is the toughest position in football. This has got to be right up there, hasn't it?
I think this one might be the toughest physically to play, the most demanding physically in terms of reaction ability and all that other stuff. I mean, if you have, for example, you're Peyton Manning, your arm has started to decline, but your brain is so well tuned and you've seen defenses so much and you know where the ball's going and you're so accurate, you can still play at a high level. When you're one of these guys, and this is one of the things that fascinates me about Revis, because he's getting old a little bit right now, and he still is able to play with those young 23-year-old guys at such an incredibly high level. And, you know, goes out there, and like you said, he's got his back turned to the quarterback. He doesn't know where the ball is. All of the things that they have to do, and he still is one of the best corners in the National Football League. So he's an anomaly to me. They don't usually last that long. No. You know, usually five, six years, is 7 years maybe, is about the length of, you know, what these guys are able to play at a high level, because your body just, you know, you lose a half a step, and it's a half a step is too many steps in when you're playing bump and run.
All right, let's go through our five then. Jeff, shall I give my five and then you give your five and then we'll chat through those?
Yeah. Hit me with what you got.
All right, so at number five, I've got Patrick Peterson of the Arizona Cardinals. I think that he struggled early last year and people started to write him off. Then there was it was diagnosed that he had diabetes. He learned to get that under control, and I think he got back to something close to his best later in the season. So Peterson is number five. This one might surprise some people, but I've got Chris Harris of the Denver Broncos. I think you have to, somewhere we have to factor in somebody who defends in the slot, because there's so much dominance on the slot wide receiver now. So Chris Harris, and I think he can play outside as well. Number three, I've got Vontae Davis of the Indianapolis Colts. Then I was struggling to separate Revis and Sherman. I really was. I think they both could be, you could make a case for both being number one. And I've just gone with Revis based on the fact he's done it for longer. And as you said, he does move about a little bit. So I've got Richard Sherman at number two and Darrell Revis at number one on my list. What about you, Jeff?
Well, you know, that's interesting, because Chris Harris didn't even make my top 10, and that's probably an oversight by me, really. I mean, like you say, there's a guy that is really, really a good player and maybe gets overshadowed a little bit by some of the other superstars on his football
team. Yeah, I guess that goes back to what you say there, Jeff. It depends how you evaluate the position, doesn't it? If you're looking at pure edge guys who are playing, you know, traditional cornerback position, then you probably wouldn't have had Harris. I've just tried to sort of mix it up a little bit there. But yeah, it depends what you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I've got a couple guys on my list that you didn't have, that it's interesting. You know, number five to me was Peterson.
Yeah.
Now, he made five to me, and it's maybe unfair, but he got to be in the top five to me because of the other things he brings to your football team. When he gets his hands on the football, he is like having an offensive player with the ball, right? I mean, whether that's in the return game or when he picks a ball off, he is such a threat with the football. And I agree with you. I saw, you know, really substandard play by him early in the year, and then he got that medical condition straightened out and came back. I know he claims to be, and they all claim to be, that's part of the personality structure that they have. He claims to be the best. He claims to be the best in the league, but I think he kind of sneaks into the top five of mine because of the fact he does have, you know, return ability after he intercepts the ball and when he gets his hand on the ball on a punt return. So, and then the next guy to me is a guy that I just love the heck out of, and he doesn't have the physical traits that I look for in the position, but because he's so hyper competitive and has such great leaping ability, he has great ball skills, and just on pure competitiveness, Brett Grimes had to be in my top five.
Yeah,
I love his toughness. He's a good tackler. He does all those things. Although he doesn't have the, you know, you look at him and you say, ah, he's too small, too short, that kind of guy.
Oh, he's a great player.
And then the other guy that I like, and I think, again, there are times when you watch him play and you go, man, he might be the best there is in the game right now, is the Joe Hayden from Cleveland.
Yeah.
I really like his game. He's another one of those guys that he doesn't play with as many great players around him as Sherman does. And so, you know, this is where, again, it's you start cutting hairs. You really get into that fine deal about they don't have in Cleveland the talent around Joe Haden that obviously Seattle does. And teams, you know, teams aren't playing from behind as much against Cleveland as they are against Seattle, which creates, you know, really when you're playing from behind, you're changing what you do offensively. Well, defensively, now what are you able to do? You're able to pin your ears back and go and really get after the quarterback, which helps the secondary players. So Joe Haden made my list because he's playing on a team that's, you know, trying to get there, and, you know, he doesn't have the great supporting cast around him, but certainly when you watch him one-on-one, he is a phenomenal player.
Jeff, do you remember, just on Joe Haden, do you remember we did a game late in the year last year, Bengals-Browns game, and he was matched up with A.J. Mm-hmm. Green, and he was outstanding, wasn't he, against A.J. Green. So you can see when he goes up against those true number ones, I mean, if I want to talk about oversights, you know, I think both those guys you've mentioned with Grimes, this is where it's such a good position, because when you said Grimes, I was kind of nodding my head and was like, yep, could have easily made my top five. And when you said Joe Haden, the first thing I thought of was that game against A.J. Green when he did a number on him.
Well, absolutely. I mean, he was all over A.J. Green that day. And again, one of the reasons why I give him bonus points is the fact that, you know, I guess Paul Kruger's probably the best, you know, pass rusher in Cleveland. And, you know, when you look at Sherman's playing behind, you know, some pretty dynamic players at linebacker and Michael Bennett up front and all that. And you got two all-pro safeties playing next to you. So, you know, I you can't discount what those guys have done, but I really gave Joe Haden bonus points because of, you know, the situation he has to play through every week. Has to play the best player, has to play him wherever that guy lines up, doesn't have great supporting cast around him, but still goes out and shuts guys down and shuts good guys down. You know, again, A.J. Green's one of the best in the game. And he really blanketed him. Now, my top two, it's interesting because I waffled. I went back and forth, and I was like, Matt, oh, yeah, well. And really, I just like you, I really think there's so little separating the two of them. I give Sherman the nod as the number one because at this time, right now, you just can't argue with the numbers.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the number of passes defensed, the number of, you know, the times that receivers he was playing were targeted, and just the, you know, the sheer number of interceptions that the guy's got.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. And you look at him physically, and, you know, here's a kid that goes to Stanford as a wide receiver and gets moved from wide receiver to DB at Stanford. And, you know, he's long. He doesn't, you know, you look at it, they're very different players. Revis is so cat quick and can turn his hips and
smooth,
you know,
isn't
so
he, Revis?
Smooth.
Yeah.
It just drives out of, I mean, you look at him backpedal, he's just beautiful almost
it's
to watch.
Great to watch.
Sherman's not that guy. Yeah, Sherman's not that guy. He's a long, tall guy with long arms. He really doesn't turn all that well. He doesn't flip his hips the way you like the defensive back to do. But he has that uncanny ability to play underneath routes. And you remember the in the playoff game when Aaron Rodgers thought that there was a penalty and just tried him in the end zone, and he was actually beaten. And just he's so long and he has such great ability to play the ball. He came from underneath and picked the ball off. So I think right now, playing in the system he's playing in, he's a unique fit for that system. And, you know, just a guy that right now I think is at the pinnacle of his game. I think Revis is still a phenomenal player, but I think what you're going to start to see now in this next little while is you're going to start to see the decline of him because he just, it's hard to do it. He's had a knee history. He's had a knee history, and it's just hard to do it at that high level as many years as he's had. But what a blessing for all of us to have seen, you know, really one of the greatest to ever play the position in the history of the National Football League during our lifetime.
Jeff, one thing with Richard Sherman, I think we're going to see in the next few years, there was he kind of grabbed our attention with that. He had a season a couple of years ago where he had 8 interceptions, and I think we're going to see fewer of those seasons because he was the least targeted cornerback last year. Like, he literally shuts down that side of the field. And you're right, whenever it seems people do try and challenge him, I can think of Kaepernick in the playoffs a couple of years ago. it results in an interception. Aaron Rodgers thought he had something that wasn't there because of Sherman's ball skills. But I think we'll see in the future seasons from Richard Sherman where he has like 3, 4, maybe 5 interceptions, because that's what happened to Darryl Green. You remember Darryl Green of the Redskins? He shut down his side of the field. But if you looked at the stats, he rarely had more than 4 interceptions in a season because you just didn't challenge him. You just didn't go there.
You wouldn't try him. I know when I was in Kansas City in 2001, he was still playing. We played the Redskins in an exhibition game, and he walked out on the field. And, I'm a football fan, obviously, and Darryl Green walked out on the field, and Darryl Green was in his 30s at that time, and not very tall, probably 5'10", but really, really, really put together, and when he turned and ran, I remember watching him on one play, and he turned and ran, and it was like, wow.
Yeah.
His acceleration and his catch-up speed was like none I had ever seen. And, he was, during his younger days, was the fastest man in the NFL. They used to have those contests, the fastest man in the NFL. He could fly and was hyper-competitive, which you look at it's interesting, Neil, you look at the psychological profiles of the players by position, and they're really different in some cases. And corner is a particularly different one because those guys have to have such strong belief systems that they can go out there and cover anybody on any play. Right. And every single one of them, and you can talk about every guy that we mentioned, they've all gotten beat, and they've gotten beat sometimes badly. And yet they have that ability to put it away and almost just get right back on the field and say to the quarterback, throw another one out here, and it's going the other way.
Jeff, that's really interesting.
That's
really interesting.
That's
because
unique.
Sorry, man. Go on.
No, that's really, that's to me is the thing that is so phenomenal about those guys. Because I remember we used to get, teams would allocate some talented corners to NFL Europe. And you get the kids and you very quickly saw what the hole in them was, whether they couldn't turn well enough or they were too short or if it was either a physical thing. But a lot of times it was that the kid just didn't have that swagger, that toughness, that mental toughness to know that he could go out there and he didn't care. He was going to just take care of his business every day, every play. And if you beat me, come at me again, because I'm going to get you next time.
And Jeff, the last couple of years, I've been going around various training camps, and one of the questions I've asked players, trying to compile a feature where you throw them all the answers into one bucket, I've been asking players, who's the best in your business? Who's the best player in the NFL? And I can actually tell you about 4 or 5 cornerbacks have looked me straight in the eye and said, me. And I've looked at them back, and I said, really? And they went, I believe it. I believe I'm the best player in the NFL, and I've never had that as much from any other position other than the cornerback, and it goes exactly to what you're saying about the mental makeup of the position.
And, that's why, in coaching, we talk about high-maintenance positions, mm-hmm. positions that, you're going to have to coach now. You're going to do your work. And coaching corners is one of those high maintenance positions because they are those guys. They are guys that have such a firm belief in their own athletic ability and that they can go out and compete and play with anybody in the league. And, I love that. I love that about those guys. I love that about, that they're so mentally tough. And I think that is really, it's not arrogance, it's mental toughness. They just truly believe that no matter what you throw at them, no matter what motion, no matter what formation, no matter what scheme, no matter what the day, no matter what the weather, and no matter what the time, it's, they're going to go out there and they're going to shut you down.
Jeff, we'll get on to the next best list and other players you like at the cornerback position in a minute. But I want to take this question out of the mailbag because it kind of relates to what you were just talking about with Richard Sherman. I think this is a really good question, especially when you consider today's NFL. So it comes from Adrian Croft, who says, Jeff, do you think more teams should try and make average receivers into cornerbacks as the majority of corners are quite short? So, Jeff, first of all, should that happen? And how tough would it be to change that position by the time they get to the NFL?
Well, it's been done a couple times, but you know, Sherman's probably the biggest, you know, name that's made that transition. But you know, usually what happens with the part of the physical thing that a corner needs to be able to do more than anything else is he needs to have that ability to turn his hips and what we call flip his hips, where he can go from backpedaling to turn and run and sprint. And having burst and catch up, what we call catch up speed, make up speed, and the ability to drive in and out of your brakes, those are the physical attributes that you look for in corner. Sometimes those are not the same things that receivers need. They're, you know, receivers a lot of times there are linear speed receivers, and then there are guys who are you know, route runners, and sometimes that skill set doesn't translate to corner because receivers can be a little stiffer in their hips than corners can. And so it's a really finite and unique skill set that, you know, you need for the position. And then on top of it, you need, like, as we've talked about so much, you need that mental makeup to be a corner. And that's why they're so hard to find. And, you know, when you look at the scouting, you know, when you go around, you're always trying to go to colleges and find players that play press man. One of the reasons why Michigan State has so many corners drafted is because in their system, they play press man, and there aren't a lot of college programs that play press man. And so you never know if a guy can do it until you get him there. One of the things, Neil, when you go to the Senior Bowl, one of the things that the coaches, first thing that they do is they line the defensive backs up against the receivers, and they just tell the DBs, go press him.
Right, and that's what you need to do, yeah.
For the corners, you got to be able to play press man, as Darrell Rivas said, and for the receivers, if you can't get off of it, you're never going to play in the National Football League.
I guess what we might see, Jeff, I mean, first of all, what Julian Edelman did a couple of years ago for the Patriots shouldn't be underestimated. He flopped from wide receiver to cornerback for their run to the Super Bowl, and now he's back as one of the top slot receivers in the NFL. But I guess what we might see, if we don't see receivers turned into corners in the pros, what we might see is more kids are in high school, 6'2", 6'3", being told, actually, you could be a cornerback in the NFL. You don't always have to be a wide receiver, because surely teams are going to want bigger corners now to match up with those big 6'5" receivers we're seeing across the league.
See, I agree with you, and I think if I was a college football coach, or if I was an amateur coach and I was looking for a place to find those guys, I'd go to the basketball court and I'd look for those 6 foot, 6'1", 6'2" basketball players who are, you know, they're a dime a dozen in basketball. The 6'2" guy is nobody, right?
Right.
And that's a long, tall corner in the National Football League. And because those guys have the same skill set, they have to change direction, they have to have great feet, they have to be fluid in their hips. And, you know, it's amazing that kids fall in love with basketball, and, you know, a 6 foot basketball player, a 6'1 basketball player is a small guy in the NBA. And, you know, a 6'1 corner, that's what everybody's looking for in the NFL. So that to me is where you could find those kind of skill sets and those kinds of athletes. And, you know, frankly, on the basketball court, you can find some of those same mental toughness things, you know, where the guys, hey, I might have missed 5 shots in a row, but I'm going to just keep shooting because that's me. I'm the best shooter on the floor.
So I've got Joe Hayden and Brent Grimes head up my next best list, along with Desmond Trufant of the Atlanta Falcons. I really like him. Good young corner. I mentioned Alteron Werner before at Tampa Bay. Sean Smith, I think, is a nice physical corner. I'd actually say physical corner-wise, I'd put him above Aqib Talib, although Talib gets a lot more Pro Bowls and a lot more attention. And I still quite like Antonio Cromartie as well. I think with the ball skills and that ability to track the football and close when the ball's in the air. Who's on your next best list, Jeff?
Well, yeah, you know, that Jonathan Joseph with the Texans is a guy I like a great deal. And I think, you know, he's one of those guys. And, you know, some of this is, if you're playing in an organization like the Texans or Joe Hayden in Cleveland, you don't get the kind of notoriety that, you know, in the public side that maybe you deserve, because I think if you talk to the receivers around the league, those are two names that you're going to hear every time. You know, Vontae Davis was an interesting one for me, Neil, because here's a guy that, in my opinion, you know, should be a little better than he is. He has a tendency to me to kind of drift a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got a little, he's big, and he's, but he's got a little stiffness too. And you know, whether it was, you know, I don't know what it is about him where I just don't see that dominant down after down play that I think he's capable of, but hasn't, you know, really hasn't, you know, shown. Tlaib's an interesting one for me too, because he's a big, physical, strong guy. He's a good tackler. He's got a lot of those things. But there, you know, you get some other things with him too, and that's, you know, you can't discount, you know, off the field stuff. So at least I don't.
He has some technique things, doesn't he, Jeff?
Talking about a player.
Does he have some technique issues?
Pardon me?
He has some technique issues, Tlaib?
Well, I think he's one of those guys that, you know. And again, it's just, when you've had a chance to watch Darrell Revis. You've had a chance to watch Darrell Revis practice. Mm. You've talked to him. There's a different level of seriousness about his craft that he brings.
Yep.
And I think that Davis and Tlaib are two guys that, you know, you look at their play, and their play would tell you that, you know, they rely too much on their physical abilities and really haven't refined their game to the point that, you know, some of the really truly great ones have. And I think, again, and again, that's not to say they're not talented, because they are super talented players. It's just that you watch them as a coach or an observer of, you know, football players, and you say, gosh, I wish that guy would just clean up a couple things about his game, because he can really, really be good. I agree with you on Cromartie. I think Cromartie's another guy that's right in that next, you know, echelon of players. And pillow that I like a great deal is Leotis McKelvin.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he's, again, an underrated guy because he's playing in Buffalo. As Buffalo, you know, makes a run for that, you know, that AFC East title, I think, which I think they're going to do this year, I think more people are going to get a chance to watch Leotis and see him play. And certainly the fans in Wembley are going to have a chance to see him when he comes over, because he is really a good player. And still hanging on and you know, now in Cleveland with Joe Hayden is Tremont Williams. And, you know, Tremont, you know, he makes an awful lot of plays.
Great
and
ball
he
skills,
is,
yeah.
Very, yeah, very, very steady, very heady, very, you know, does a great job of, you know, playing against the best receiver, can play in the slot, can play outside, you know. And, again, for a guy who was a college walk-on and a NFL free agent, you know, he's really made it into my top 10 the hardest way. And sure, he's one of my guys, and I got a soft spot for him. But yeah. I still believe he's one of the top 10 in the league.
You're allowed one of your guys in the top 10, Jeff. That's all right. And I think the difference between Revis and Vontae Davis and Aqib Tlaib is what you coaches strive for at every position. That's consistency, isn't it? I mean, Revis does it down in, down out, practice in, practice out.
Well, that's where that's to me that you talk about professionalism. And that's where, you know, that's where that comes from. And it's really interesting. I was listening to an interview. There was an incident at UCLA this week that was really you know, crazy. Sean Combs, Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, whatever you want to call him, his son is playing at UCLA and apparently didn't show up to summer, you know, conditioning in very good shape. The strength coach threw him off the field, berated him in front of his teammates. He goes home and tells his dad. His dad comes back to the strength room at UCLA. A fight ensues, and P. Diddy gets arrested for swinging a kettlebell at Sal Alossi, the strength coach.
And that strength coach was the one who got in trouble at the Jets, wasn't he? With the tripping up the Dolphins player.
Exactly. So all of a sudden, you know, all these stories start coming out about, you know, both P. Diddy and Sal Alossi. And one of the guys that they interviewed was talking about when Alossi was with the Jets and how Darrell Revis is very quiet, very reserved, very much his own man,
yeah,
and very conscientious about everything that he does. Well, he and Alossi got sideways, and Alossi challenged him and apparently put his hands on Revis. He said, Revis gave him a two-piece chicken nugget right on the chin, and the next thing you know, Losey's getting up off the floor. So, you know, that says to me an awful lot about Darrell Revis and, you know, just how serious he is about his craft and about, you know, one of the reasons why he's been able to overcome that knee injury and play in, what, four different systems now?
Yeah.
And still play at a high level is he is just so conscientious with his work.
Absolutely. Should we take a couple of questions from the mailbag, Jeff?
Let's do it.
All right. So this one comes from Jonathan Justin. A couple of questions here to finish off this week's Inside the Huddle podcast. Jonathan Justin says, Jeff, people say that playing left tackle is different from playing right tackle. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago, Jeff. He says, is it the same at guard?
Not nearly as much, because the reason that left tackle is so tough to play is, first of all, it's the quarterback's blind side. So you have to be absolutely spot on with your techniques and your protection, because the quarterback cannot see the rush. And so if you're on the right side with a right-handed quarterback, you know, obviously that's the sight line of the quarterback. Mm. If, you know, if you make a mistake, he can kind of get his way out of it or should be able to move around in the pocket. On the left side, it's, you know, the, quote, blind side. So you have to be right on with your technique and your pass protection. And you're going to face the best pass rushers all the time, because normally defenses put their best pass rusher at right end so that he can attack the quarterback's blind side. Inside at guard, there's less of a difference in terms of the techniques that are involved and the players that you play. But what a guard needs is a different skill set, too. Guards are typically playing with people right over the top of them. They have to be stronger. They have to be, you know, they're more physical usually, and depending on the scheme, you know, you may want a guy that's a puller, and so, you know, that's a different skill set that you're looking for. But comparing right guard to left guard is really not as big a switch as, you know, left tackle to right tackle.
All right, and one more question here from Ethan Green. He says, do you guys think Odell Beckham Jr. will live up to his performance from last season? I mean, Jeff, from what he did in 12 games, I mean, we could be looking, if he could put together an entire season, we could be looking at a 2,000-yard season. We could be looking at a true superstar in the NFL. He's so exciting, but he had the hamstring thing last year, and he's had the hamstring thing this off-season. It has to be a bit of a worry.
Well, it certainly does, and I think, Neil, you know, you're right on in having some, you know, cautionary feelings about this, because here's the reality of the National Football League. You come in as a highly touted young player and you make some phenomenal plays, and then all of a sudden you're on the cover of Madden, you're traveling all over, your catches all over YouTube, you're viral on YouTube, everything, you're living in New York, everything that you do is multiplied. What concerns me more, and, you know, this is that coaching paranoia that you alluded to, what concerns me more than, frankly, his hamstring is just his ability, and this is not because I think there's a character flaw there. I think this is just because, you know, having, you know, been around these guys, how bright those lights are.
Yeah.
Can he deal with all of the other things with the expectations? Because now if he drops a ball, it's going to be like, what's wrong with Odell Beckham? If he can't make a circus catch like he made against the Cowboys, it's like, well, Beckham's not playing at the level that he played before. The expectation grows so big, and particularly when you're in New York, which is the number one media market in the world, and, you know, they've got everybody's expecting you to be that guy every game. That's a lot to ask of a young player. Mm. And so much of having that kind of a breakout year and becoming that guy depends on factors that are frankly out of your control. How many times are you targeted? Can the quarterback get you the ball? Can the left tackle, you know, hold up in pass protection so that you can work to get open? So I really, really, really try as hard as I can not to put unreal expectations on players. Mm. I think he is, without a shadow of a doubt, one of the most talented players at his position in the National Football League. But to say that he's going to become, you know, Jerry Rice or whomever, you know, that's a tall task. And I think we just let him be Odell Beckham and he'll be fine.
Right. And Jeff, there are no guarantees. This is the thing. As much as we get excited about him, I go back to that quote you use a lot about how we all love football, but football doesn't love us. Gale Sayers was a Hall of Fame running back. He played, what, 6-7 years. Terrell Davis had his career cut short. His body wasn't up to 15 years in the NFL. Now, if we're seeing these hamstring things, that's why part of me is cautious, because it doesn't necessarily translate that you're a great player, you're going to have a great career. There are no guarantees in the NFL.
Absolutely not. And, you know, actually the game, you know, the game it eats its own. And that's just the nature of, that's just the nature of football. And so, you know, I just, like I say, I just enjoy the pure grace and beauty of his game. I enjoy the, you know, the impact of his phenomenal playmaking ability, and try not to put too much on him, because there have been so many guys in the past, and you alluded to two of the most significant that, you know, had incredibly bright futures just snuffed out at the height of their skills, you know, with injuries, and that's, you know, you wish that on no one, but it's just a reality. So, you know, let's temper the expectations and just let this young kid go develop and become hopefully the next superstar in New York.
Jeff, I love that quote. The game eats its own. I'm going to use that on Sky, and I'm going to say it before you say it and pretend that it was mine all along. It'll be the first thing.
You're using my best stuff, Neil. Come on, man.
Somebody will ask me a generic question about looking forward to the season, and I'll drop in "the game eats its own" in the first line, and everyone will be like, "What?" It's like, yeah, but I got it in there. Jeff, we're out of time, mate. Good luck on Friday night. It's Friday night, right? Your first game?
Well, tune in to BT Sport ESPN, and I know that's hard for me to say that as a Sky Sports guy, but, if you know, Ticat Nation UK, it's time to rise up.
All right, so we're going to follow those Hamilton Tiger Cats all through the season. Jeff, next week, let's do the top five safeties. Let's stay on defense, do the safeties.
I love it. Now we're talking.
Yeah, I thought you would. That's Jeff Reinbold. I've been Neil Reynolds. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. He's about to hit the field for the first time this season. Until next week, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.